listening at home, at work, or anywhere. Thanks for making Para-X part of your day. Your source for everything paranormal. Para-X.
The views and opinions expressed by the host and tonight's guest are not necessarily those of this radio network, its affiliates, or its sponsors. Listener discretion is advised. Now lock your doors, open your minds, and prepare yourself to go
beyond the edge.
Booster.
Go.
Retro.
Go.
Vital.
We're go flat.
Guidance.
Guidance go.
Surgeon.
Go flat.
Ecom.
We're go flat.
GNC.
We're go.
Telmu.
Go.
Control.
Go flat.
Procedures.
Go.
Inco.
Go.
FAO.
We are go.
Network.
Go.
Recovery.
Go.
Capcom.
We're go flight.
Launch control, this is Houston. We are go for launch.
10, 9, 8, 7, ignition sequence started. All engines are started. We have ignition. 2, 1, 0, we have a liftoff. We have a liftoff and it's lighting up the area. It's just like daylight here at Kennedy Space Center as the Saturn V is moving off the pad. It has now cleared the tower.
Lock your doors.
Lock your doors.
Lock your doors. Lock your doors. And open your minds. Beyond the Edge Radio is back. You're tuned into the best damn alternative talk on the planet. BTE Radio. Sunday nights and BTE Radio. Doesn't get any better than this. Welcome back to BTE Radio. Get ready, because the sh is about to get real. Often replicated, never duplicated. For the real deal, baby. BTE Radio. Mama warned you there'd be shows like this. Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio.
Beyond the Edge Radio. If you're not listening, you're just stupid.
And good evening and welcome to another edition of Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. Happy Sunday, everybody. It's January 25th, 8:03 here on this Eastern United States of America. I'm your host, Eric Altman. I'm in a good mood tonight. And you know why I'm in a good mood tonight? I'll tell you why I'm in a good mood tonight, because it's spooky Pennsylvania night. That's right, folks. We got all kinds of exciting things going on here. We got BTE Radio from 8 to 10 tonight. And then at 10 o'clock, Finding Bigfoot. They're coming to Pennsylvania tonight, folks, and they're coming to my research area. Woohoo! Yeah, me! it's everybody's research area, but they're going to be in an area that I do a lot of research in, and they're going to be talking to a lot of witnesses that I, along with members of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, have talked to and interviewed, and you'll see some of them on the show tonight. Dave Dragazin, a good friend of mine and the Western Assistant Director for the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society, helped to get the production crew at Finding Bigfoot in and around Pennsylvania and southwestern PA and hooked up with the eyewitnesses and sighting locations. So excited about that, and I'm excited about tonight's show because we've got a great guest co-host. She's returning from our Halloween show. Marie Samuels, welcome back.
Thank you for having me, Eric. I'm honored to be part of this competition, and I'm stoked to be back on Beyond the Edge Radio.
Well, we're glad you're back with us tonight, because we've got a very special guest, and this is right up your alley. Bob Cranmer joins us tonight from Allegheny County, just a little south of Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, and he's joining us tonight to talk about a book that he's written called The Demon of Brownsville Road, and it's going to be a phenomenal show tonight.
It really, really is. I've read the book. I've also seen it was featured on a show called The Exorcist Files. His story was featured because Adam Bly investigated it. And I have so many questions for Bob. I can't wait to get him on the line.
Yeah, he's going to be joining us at the bottom of this hour at 8:30.
Right.
And I've got some questions for him, too. I've got to say a special thank you to Gabrielle Cole, our booking person, who does a great job booking guests for the show. She got in touch with me about Bob, asking if Bob could be a guest on the program. And, of course, I jumped right on it because I've heard Bob on many other radio programs, such as Darkness Radio, for example. And I'm very familiar with Bob because obviously he was the county commissioner for Allegheny County here in southwestern Pennsylvania. And that's only about 30 miles from my home here in Jeanette, Pennsylvania. So neighborhood guy kind of thing going on, you know, my backyard. And, you know, it's really cool that we're going to have him on tonight to talk about this. I've driven past his house and never knew it was, first of all, never knew it was his house. But secondly, never knew that that kind of stuff was going on in that house. So I'm really excited, as you can tell, to have Bob on tonight and looking forward to his interview.
Me too. I am very excited for this.
Before we jump into a couple of announcements, Marie, if you could give everybody just a quick summary of who you are and what you're into as far as paranormal goes and a little bit about your show and just bring us up to speed on Marie Samuels.
Well, I am a Seattle native, born and raised, and I know that our guest tonight is a Steelers fan. So before we get him on the line, I have to say, Seahawks! Seahawks are going to the Super Bowl.
I knew
so
that was coming.
I just had to get that out there. Before, I didn't want to, you know, bring that up with him on. I've been into the paranormal, the macabre, the horror genre my entire life, ever since I was a little girl. I've also been into radio, talk radio. I love WKRP in Cincinnati. I always thought, you know, being a DJ would be the coolest job in the world. And I came across Jim Harold's Paranormal Podcast a few years ago. And that's when it occurred to me. I thought, you know, I can do this. Anybody can do this. I can do that. I have the ability, you know, with the technology that we have today, I can put together my own website and podcast. And I went ahead and did it. And so the website is macabremoments.com. And macabre is M-A-C-A-B-R-E. I've been doing it for about a year and a half. I have 28 episodes in the archives so far. And I've been blessed to have some very prominent people in the field as my guests. I've interviewed people such as Jeff Belanger, Joshua P. Warren, Nick Redfern, Patrick Doyle from Ghost Mine, Mark Anthony, the psychic lawyer, Tim Yancey, and Eric Altman was my first Halloween special. So you can go to macabremoments.com and check out my archive.
Very cool. Yeah, I had a blast doing that show. It was a lot of fun. And
Thank you.
You just had Robert Murch on just recently.
Yes, and we debated on the danger of the Ouija board, and that was a very important interview for me. I had a message that I wanted to get out to people, so I really hope people go and listen to that.
Yeah, I had a chance to catch most of the show. I didn't catch all of it, but I got to go back and refresh the archives there and check it out. And you always do a great podcast, so I'm looking forward to that issue or episode with Robert Murch, the Ouija board expert.
Yeah, and that's actually his second time I've had him on the show. He was my second interview when I first started. Him and Brandon Hodge were both on, and we talked about the history of the Ouija board, the Fold family, and the other writing. What does Brandon Hodge do? The talking, not the talking board, but the the thing. It's escaping me now what it's called, but it's a planchette with a pencil in it, and they merged the two together to make the Ouija board. So you'd back and listen to it. I'd have to go back and listen to it, obviously. But, you know, it was a year and a half ago, so.
Very cool. Very cool. Well, it's a good show, and I invite people to check it out, macabremoments.com, and stop by and show Marie some love and take a listen to some of her archive shows. It's really cool. And it's funny you mentioned Jim Harold and the Paranormal Podcast, because I just did an episode with Jim that was aired last week, and a lot of fun. He's a great guy.
He is. He's an excellent interviewer. I've called in on a few campfires and told him a few of my scary stories. So
very cool. I'm going to be working with Jim on a special project coming up in the future, so looking forward to that. Well, I'm glad that you're back with us and part of the contest. Congratulations and best of luck to you. We're going to have a great show tonight with Bob Cranmer as our special guest joining us at 8:30. But before we get to that, I got a couple of announcements. Let's start off with upcoming events, because there's some big names added to a couple of upcoming events that we want to talk about. First, we'll jump into this one. And just to let everybody know, of course, as I mentioned, tonight on Animal Planet, Finding Bigfoot, their season finale, they come to Fayette County, Pennsylvania, which is my backyard. and they're going to be doing a show called Paranormal Squatchtivity. It's a look at Bigfoot sightings and some of the paranormal activity that goes on in Pennsylvania. They're going to be featuring some of the eyewitnesses on cases that I was fortunate enough, or members of the Pennsylvania Bigfoot Society were fortunate enough to interview and investigate. They're going to be working with a group that I belong to, Goosebumps Paranormal Society. Jimmy and Dee Dee Trick are the founders of that group, and you'll see them on the show tonight. You might see me in the town hall. I'll be sitting next to my niece, who has the bright purple hair. You can't miss it. So look for me and my smiling face and sitting next to my niece with the purple hair. And you might see some other folks that you recognize in the chat room tonight. Godzilla, Walt Wadsworth, was there. He did a segment on his sighting, and many others were on site at the town hall as well. Too many to mention, but a lot of good people there for the show. So check it out tonight after the show, 10 o'clock start time on the East Coast. Animal Planet Finding Bigfoot is the show. It's their season finale as they come to Pennsylvania. April 4th, Destination America is back with their hit show, Mountain Monsters. It's their season 3 premiere that kicks off April 4th at 10 p.m. April 18th, the 24th Annual Bigfoot Conference to be held at Salt Fork State Park in Cambridge, Ohio. The guest list has grown. It kind of shrunk and then it grew again, and I'll explain what I mean by that. The guest list includes Todd Neese. He's a sighting witness from Oregon. Diane Stocking Neese, who is Todd's wife. Dina Palazzini from Rhode Island. She had a sighting, and she heads up the Big Roadie Project out of Rhode Island. Carl L. Johnson, who is a demonologist, part of the famous Johnson brothers, Keith and Carl. He's going to be there lecturing on his work with Dina and the Big Roadie Project. And just added to the event, Dr. Jeff Meldrum. Jeff is best known as an anthropologist and a primate anatomy expert from Idaho State University. I was on the bill to speak, but I asked Don if I could step down as one of the speakers. But I will be at the event. I'm going to be helping Don Keating, the organizer of the event, with hosting and you know, ticket sales and all that good stuff. So you can still come out and say hello. VIP seating for that event is $35. General admission seating is $15. Vendor tables are $75, and for more information, you can contact Don Keating at EOBIC. That's E as in Eric, O as in Oscar, B as in Bigfoot, I as in Investigation, C as in Center at yahoo.com. Or go to the website, the official website, annualbigfootconference.weebly, spelled W-E-E-B-L-Y.com, for more information on that. Paranormal Roundtable taking place April 18th in Pennsylvania, Albertus Area Community Center, West 2nd Street in Albertus, PA, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. It's an all-day event featuring ghosts, paranormal, cryptozoology, UFOs, cases of high strangeness in Pennsylvania. It'll feature Ghost Hunters Incorporated, UFO Research Center of PA, Legend Hunters, and more. For more information on that, you can go to the website ufocorp.com. Just as it sounds, ufocorp.com, and there's information there right on the main page about ticket prices and the event for the day. All proceeds go to the Albertus Lockridge Historical Society and the Boy Scout Troop 86 of Albertus. And then we were just talking about Robert Murch. OuijaCon is coming to Baltimore, Maryland, April 23rd, 24th, and 25th. Come out, celebrate the history and legends of the Ouija board with some of the world's foremost authorities and experts on the subject. The conference includes lectures, workshops, collectors from around the world. We'll be setting up a temporary museum showcasing over a century of the talking boards. The event will feature Robert Murch, Jeff Belanger, Chip Coffey, John Zaffis, Rosemary Ellen Guiley, Brandon Hodge, Dave Schrader, Karen Dahlman, and Darren Evans. A great speaker lineup. And if you want more information on that, just go to your browser and type in OuijaCon. 2015, and then it'll come up, and then you can find out all about it. And then last but not least, Creature Weekend is coming back to Salt Fork State Park May 1st through the 3rd, and it's got a really interesting speaker lineup. I'd like to get out there and try to attend it if I'm able to. It includes Nick Redfern, Ken Gerhart, and Trapper from the TV show Mountain Monsters, Trapper John Tice, of course, and some of the cast members of the show will be on hand. And for more information on that event, tickets, and all that good stuff, you can go to creatureweekend.com. So check that out as well. Some really cool events coming up this spring. Now, people coming up on the show. Let's get into that because we got a fantastic February coming your way. It's cryptid month here at BTE Radio. That's right. We're going to be talking all things cryptid and cryptozoology next month on the show. Starting February 1st, we have Alan McGargle, Jesse Morgan, both of Fathom Frontiers, and Seth Breedlove. He is a film director. They have a new short documentary film coming out called Small Town Monsters, featuring the Minerva Monster. And the Minerva Monster is a documentary centered around a series of sightings of a strange creature in and around the town of Minerva, Ohio, that took place in August of 1978. So it's going to be cool to talk with them next week on the show about this supposed Bigfoot-like creature and how it harassed a family in Minerva and some of the experiences they went through and what the documentary film is all about. So we'll look forward to having them on. Then February 8th, our good friend and one of the stars of Finding Bigfoot returns to the program. Cliff Berrickman comes back to BTE Radio for a nice discussion with Cliff about season 7 of the show. We'll talk to him about the Pennsylvania episode and some of his favorite episodes and moments that he's filmed with Finding Bigfoot. A great show coming your way February the 8th. February 15th, cryptozoologist and author Adam Davies is joining us on the program. We'll be talking to Adam about his work looking into the Orang Pendek and other strange cryptids from around the globe. Adam is from the UK, and he's traveled worldwide. He's an international traveler and investigates some of these strange cryptids and cases. So we'll look forward to having Adam joining us on February the 15th. February 22nd, it's Ladies' Night here at BTE Radio. Ladies of Bigfoot join us. Monica Rollins, Kathy Strain, Melissa Hovey-Larson, and possibly a fourth guest. We're still waiting on confirmation from her. But it'll be Ladies' Night here at BTE Radio as we talk about women in Bigfoot research and the impact they've made and some of the trials and tribulations they faced. So it's going to be a great show on February 22nd. And then wrapping up the month there, that's it. February 22nd is the end of the month. I was thinking there's one more week, but it's not leap year this year, so we don't have any more guests for February. But coming in the future, some of the guests we're looking forward to having on the show, John Trapper Tice from Mountain Monsters, David Politis, Tim Dennis from Darkness Radio is going to be joining us, and a whole lot more. So make sure you keep it right here to BTE Radio and go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. for updates on our guest list. And if you want to be a guest on the show, btebookings@yahoo.com. Get a hold of Gabriel Cole. She is our booking person for the show. She'll get you set up and get you a date on the program with myself and whoever our future co-host may be. So that,
fingers crossed.
I was waiting for that one. I don't blame you. I don't blame you. It'd be kind of cool to be a guest co-host here, I think.
But I would love it.
But that's the announcements that we have as far as people coming on the program and as far as upcoming events. All right, let's jump into we got about 12 minutes before we go to the bottom of the hour. So let's jump into the latest in the paranormal news. What's going on? Have you heard anything new and interesting going on out there, Marie?
You know, I was worried you were going to ask me this. I've been sick with the flu all week, so I really haven't been on Facebook much. I haven't seen a lot of what's going on. So I don't really have any input as far as news goes. I hate to tell you that, but
that's okay.
You know, with work and I have a 9-to-5 that I do Monday through Friday. So, and it's actually a fairly new job that I just took. And then with being sick, I haven't been on the internet much.
Well, that's all right. There's interesting things going on. I've been, of course, being in the world of cryptozoology, I get a lot of stories sent to me and a lot of different links and being part of Darkness Radio and, of course, this show, I always am following up on some of the Bigfoot news. One thing I found very, very funny that I've got to share with you here, there was a story that came out on January 15th about an intensive care nurse in LaGrange, Ohio, that believed she took a picture of what she believes is a Sasquatch. And the picture was posted on a musician's blog or forum called The Gear Page by a guy named Gertz. And Gertz goes on to say that this woman works in the ICU, really freaked out about what she took. They definitely say it was an ape-like being walking along a fence line on the snowy ground. And the picture, when I first looked at it, I'll be honest with you, I was like, it's a cutout. It's a wooden cutout or it's a cardboard cutout, but it's a cutout. It has no depth to it or no dimension to it. It doesn't. It looks like a Bigfoot. It looks like the famous Patterson Bigfoot, you know, the kind of looks at the camera as he walks away.
Right.
So I'm kind of like, well, it looks like a cutout. But I always try to remain open-minded, and I don't poo-poo everything out. Most things I do, but not everything. So I let this one go because there was a little bit of snow on the backside of this cutout. So maybe this cutout fell over or something. I don't know. But regardless, it was an interesting story that came out until I found out a very good friend of mine, Sonia Horseman, posted on Facebook about the story. She said, I'd like to see the picture and I'd like to see the story if anybody could post it. So somebody sent her the link, and a couple hours later she posted, it's funny because that's a picture of my yard, and that's a picture of the Sasquatch cutout that I have in my yard.
So you were right from the beginning.
Yep.
That is hilarious.
Yeah, she put it out there because she does Bigfoot research, and she wants people to know where her house is and where she lives in case they drop by for a psychic reading or to go Bigfoot researching with her. So she has the cutout along her fence in the yard. And sure enough, that's her cutout, and that's her fence and her yard.
Well, and when you mentioned that it was in the snow, I was going to ask, did the person that took the picture go out and look for prints in the snow? That would be the first thing I would do after I snapped the picture, would be to go out and try and find the prints, right?
Well, it's funny you mentioned that, because in the article they talk about going back out to the site to look for prints, but they were too afraid to do so because they were afraid the Bigfoot might be out there. Matter of fact, here's the exact quote. The nurse's husband and children say the musician were also startled by the alleged creature. He also claims that he is trying to get family members to collect some possible physical evidence, such as footprints, but that, of course, no one wants to go back to the area.
Or did they and realize it was a cutout and then just let it ride?
Yeah. So that was...
We'll never know.
Yeah, that was an interesting story that was shared with me. And the other one, real quick, this was sent to me just a day or two ago by Dave Schrader from Darkness Radio, asking my thoughts on it. Tom Biscardi, a very well-known Bigfoot investigator, he runs the group Searching for Bigfoot. He is surrounded and mirrored by controversy, probably one of the most controversial Bigfoot researchers in the field. He was involved, although he says he wasn't, he was in a roundabout kind of way involved with the hoax of 2008, the Bigfoot in the freezer.
Uh-huh.
And he's forming a group and trying to collect $3 million to start a legitimate Bigfoot business to go out there and collect Bigfoot, a body, a specimen, part of a body. So the article came out that Bigfoot research is no longer about the passion and the fun of it. It's about making money. And it's an interesting article. It's another one of Tom's ways of trying to make money, because he openly admits that he's a businessman and it's about business. So
Right.
Very interesting article that came out. And if you get a chance to find it online, I don't have the exact link in front of me, but it is an interesting article nonetheless. And I invite everybody to check it out and have a good laugh.
Yeah, it's too bad that there's people out there in the field that do this type of thing.
It happens, unfortunately, and it happens not a lot, but there are those out there who are trying to make money off of the subject. Todd Standing, for example, and there's some others out there who have set up those GoFundMe or
the Kickstarter,
right, to try to raise money to do these field expeditions. And I hate to tell you guys, but they really don't go anywhere.
Yeah, I wouldn't imagine they would. Especially, I mean, they have a reputation now, so I don't know how he thinks he's going to succeed, but more power to him.
Yeah, that's what I say, more power to him. So, but that's really the only cryptid news I wanted to share this week as far as latest things going on in the world of cryptozoology. As far as paranormal goes, the shows are back on the air, as I talked about last week and the week before. We've got Destination America's Monsters and Mysteries in America. Mm-hmm. And that one this past week featured the Tennessee Wildman. I almost said Kentucky Wildman. The Tennessee Wildman and then the reptile of California. I believe it was near Anaheim or somewhere out that area. But I didn't catch the whole episode. It was very interesting what I did see. But if you're into reptoids or reptiles or reptilians.
Reptilians. Yeah.
Monsters and Mysteries in America might be the show for you.
So. Well, I've got that one in my DVR, actually. I have to watch it, but I have got the series recording set, so.
Yeah, they're going to have a look at some different types of cryptids this coming year. They've pretty much run the gamut on Bigfoot and Loch Ness Monster and Champ and Mothman. So they're doing reptilians now, I guess. Weird. But
there's a group of people out there that, you know, David Icke, he's swears that they're there.
Yeah. Oh yeah. And you know, there's a lot of people that believe that the reptilians are real. Some believe they're in high positions in government offices.
This is correct.
There was a YouTube video out there that showed President Obama might have been a reptilian.
Well, yeah, they talk about that. That's the theory that a lot of the presidents are reptilian, that the royal family is reptilian. Queen, you know, the queen and sons and so on. So I don't know. I mean, maybe there is something to it.
Yeah, there could be. There could be. I don't know. But that shows out, of course. Ghost Adventures is back, minus Nick. They still have Aaron and Zach, and I believe Billy Tully has kind of stepped in where Nick Groff was, filling the shoes. And they've done a couple interesting episodes. I did get to catch the Sally House episode and the Pickmans. Wow, Deborah and Tony Pickman, what they went through, and you know, learning about the Sally ghost and then seeing Zach and the crew back in the Sally House and what they experienced. If you haven't seen that episode yet, wow, that's a creepy one.
That's another one in my DVR I have to watch. But I did watch the one where they went to the Bell Witch Cave.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and that was intense.
It was. And the Bell Witch has always been a fascination of mine. It's always been an interesting story. So it was kind of cool to see them in the cave and tromping around the Bell area, the Bell Farm and whatnot. So
Right. And they had that new contraption with the rods that light up. With that thing, that was cool.
Yeah, I'm not sure exactly how that works, but it was interesting to see the going off in the cave, and you know, I guess it's based on energy and emotions.
Electromagnetic field and static electricity and different vibrations, I think.
Yeah. So it was a very cool show. I did like that, and I'm glad to see that the guys are still doing it after, 10 years now? They're still working on it, so.
Well, they've always been my favorite. I think that they've had the best approach to paranormal investigating on a TV show by not having a camera crew. You know, they're the only ones that are filming, so there's very little chance of a contamination. And I respect the way that they investigate.
Yeah, it's an interesting show, and Zach gets a lot of negative feedback for his muscle shirts and his adrenaline and his a little bit of ego, but still, I think it's a good show.
I think it boils down to passion. I think he's very passionate about the subject.
Yeah.
And I think it comes across as ego, but it's really passion.
Yeah, that's a good way of putting it.
Thank you.
Good way of putting it. Well, like I said, there's really not much in the way of things we can talk about paranormal news-wise, and the shows, of course. You know, they're on. You can catch them on Travel Channel and Destination America. Of course, Josh Gates is back on Travel Channel with his new show, Destination Unknown, I believe. Something like that. I lost my train of thought. But at any rate, it's on. It's been interesting so far, and I can't wait to see the show about Jesse James next week. That should be an interesting program. So a lot of good stuff on TV to watch if you get bored or if you're home with the flu.
Exactly, which a lot of us have been. Blech.
Yeah. Before we go to break, I have a really cool prize to give away tonight on the show. I'm feeling kind of generous. And Expedition Unknown, thank you, Sailing Cat. I appreciate that in the chat room. But I have a really cool book to give away tonight on the program since it's a spooky night here in Pennsylvania. This is a book written by Kara Hughes. It's Myths and Mysteries of Pennsylvania, True Stories of the Unsolved and Unexplained. And we'll give that away to the third caller. At our toll-free number, 1-877-677-2858 or 724-824-1494. Again, 724-824-1494 or toll-free, 1-877-677-2858. Let's head to break. We come back with Bob Cranmer and the Demon of Brownsville Road. You all set?
I am more than set.
We'll be back, folks. Keep it right where you're at because you don't want to miss tonight's show.
Pull the covers over your head and pray for morning. Back.
BTE Radio. Get ready, because the shit is about to get real.
And welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para-X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. It is Sunday night, 8:38 here on the East Coast, and welcome back to the show. Got some bad news. Everybody doesn't like to hear bad news, but it is what it is. We're running late on our guest. I tried calling him, and no answer. And he just popped up on Skype, accepted my friend request, so we just very well might have Bob on the show here. Joining us after all. So, yay us!
Yay, yes!
Otherwise, we're going to have to wing it. So let me go ahead and add Bob to the group here. Hi, BTE Radio. Mr. Cranmer, good evening.
Hi.
How are you tonight, sir?
I'm fine. I was just starting to get a little concerned. I didn't hear from you.
Yeah, I just tried to call the number that your wife provided, and it went to a voicemail. So, but welcome to tonight's show, Mr. Cranmer. It's a pleasure to have you with us. Thank you for calling in. I really do appreciate that.
Well, and, thank you for having me.
Oh, it's my pleasure. We've been looking forward to having you on the show now for quite some time. I am familiar with the work you've done in Pittsburgh and Allegheny County. Very familiar with your book. I was first introduced to you on a program called Darkness Radio with Dave Schrader about 4 or 5 months ago. You told your story there, and a very captivating story. But before we get into the story itself, The Demon of Brownsville Road, the wonderful book that you wrote. First, let me introduce you to our co-host, Marie Samuels. Marie, this is Mr. Bob Cranmer.
Hi, Bob. It's very nice to speak with you.
Likewise. Thank you.
And if you wouldn't mind, give us a brief background about who Bob Cranmer is so the people have a little familiarity of where you're coming from and they know about your background and who you are and, of course, being a resident of Allegheny County, Pennsylvania.
Again, I'm happy to do that. I would like to preface that with the fact that, you know, I know that paranormal investigations and paranormal, the whole world of the paranormal over the past 10 years or so has really exploded, so to speak, and there are so many groups and, you know, so many shows are dedicated to it. And I'm certainly happy to have, you know, written a book that delves into that. But as far as my background goes, I was never particularly involved in any type of, you know, paranormal activity or paranormal interest. I was just my family and my wife and I, you know, regular people. I never had any experience or interest whatsoever in the paranormal. Not that I didn't believe in it or anything like that. I just never had any experience, and certainly saw the movie The Exorcist and saw maybe the Amityville Horror, but you know, there's where it stopped. So never in my wildest dreams did I ever think that I would write a book like this. I grew up in Pittsburgh, in the little town where I live now, which is a suburb, Brentwood. Graduated from one of the local universities here. Was commissioned the second lieutenant in the United States Army in 1978. And we went on to, my wife and I, who I married a year later, went on to what we thought would be a 30-year career in the military. After 8 years or so in the Army, we kind of got disenchanted with the lifestyle and decided we wanted to come home and live in Pittsburgh. And we were able to accomplish that over about an 18-month period, 18 months to 2 years, made our way back here, bought this house, this big old Victorian mansion, so to speak, which is the subject of the book. But also I then got involved in local politics, ran for my local city council, then went on to a much higher, more responsible office of county commissioner. I was chairman of the Board of Commissioners here in Allegheny County, which is Pittsburgh, from 1996 until 2000. We did a lot, built a couple stadiums, one for the Pittsburgh Steelers, one for the Pittsburgh Pirates, built a new convention center. So, you know, I was involved in a lot of important stuff and am a very well-known person in the area, even now, 15 years after being in office. And again, writing a book like this and it coming out last year, because it took me years to get it published, really kind of took the city by storm. This certainly is not the type of book that anyone expected, you know, from a former politician. It just doesn't fit. And but needless to say, I believe that the credibility that I have as a former public official added to the credibility in which the book was received. And it has garnered and attracted a lot of interest locally and nationally, and I believe soon internationally. So that's pretty much who I am and how I ended up talking to you this evening.
Well, we're grateful that you were able to share your Sunday night with us. I'm a fellow Southwestern Pennsylvanian myself out here in Westmoreland County, so not too far away from where you live there on Brownsville Road. And I was thinking to myself when I first heard your interview with Dave and then taking a look at the book and learning about your story, I thought, man, I've been up and down Brownsville Road so many times, and I've probably driven right by your house and never paid any mind or any thought of anything strange.
Well, should you have? Yeah.
Yeah. So to hear your story and to be familiar with your work in Allegheny County and for Pittsburgh and for the Steelers, the Pirates, the convention center, as you said, you know, I was taken back. I sat back in my chair and thought, wow, I remember Bob when Bob was in office. And this story is just, I was stunned, really, when I started hearing some of the details of it. Now, this happened when you moved into a home that you loved from your childhood, a childhood dream that you wanted to own a house.
Yes, this was kind of spooky, as well. And, this house attracted me. I spoke, to a large group the other night, and as I explained, this house attracted me from my earliest memories, you know, as a child venturing out into the community. It just reached out to me, and through my childhood and teenage years and into my adult life, my desire was just to go into this house. It was just very kind of seductive. I was always and am very interested in history, and this house is a very unique architecture. It was designated a historic landmark by Pittsburgh History and Landmarks. And, yeah, I always wanted to just go in the house and look at it. Was never able to do that until the fall of 2000, or excuse me, the fall of 19, wow, I'm dating myself, 1988, when we came back here to live. And coinciding with our coming back here, just so happens, the owners decided to put the house up for sale. I mean, kind of like the same week. We arrive, they decide to put the house up for sale. So the first time I went into the house to see it, to view it, my childhood dream was to look at it to buy. It's kind of spooky.
Now, I've got to ask you, as a kid, and you're probably familiar with this, all kids have that one house in the neighborhood that kind of gives you the creeps as you walk by it. You know, it kind of gives off that odd feeling or that feeling of, I don't know if I want to walk by there alone at night. Did this house ever do that to you? Or is this
no. Kind of in fact, that house was about a block away and across the street. And okay. Everybody knew the haunted house in Brentwood. It sat empty for about 30 years.
Okay.
Now, my house had a reputation of being haunted as well, which I did not know. And if you read, when you read the book, you'll see that there's a relationship between those two houses, and things that happened in the house I bought were initiated in the other house that came to be known as the Brentwood's Haunted House. But to my surprise, in early 1989, when I was at my new job in downtown Pittsburgh, and I was describing to a local man what house I had purchased, he told me, "Oh, you bought the haunted house." I said, "No, the haunted house is across the street and a block down." He said, "No, your house, I know your house. Your house is haunted." And he went on to describe to me how his father had gotten into the house as a young boy back during the late 1930s. With a friend, and it was empty at the time. The people almost lost it for taxes, and it was repossessed, so no one was in it. And he said that his father told him they were chased out of it by something terrifying that appeared to them. So when I heard that, not that I wanted to hear that, but by that time, we had already begun to experience paranormal activity.
Now, when you first purchased the house, and as you said, you arrived back in Pittsburgh and the family was selling the house, did they say anything to you while you were moving in or kind of lead you in that direction? Maybe there was something strange about the house. Did they make any mention of it?
No, they didn't. In fact, we had a strange occurrence the first time we were looking at the house, and one of our children wandered off, our three-year-old son, and we found him not long after that by himself, isolated on the staircase, hyperventilating and crying. And, you know, it wasn't just because he was lost. The woman of the house ran and embraced him and asked him what he had seen, which my wife thought, that's an odd thing to say. What do you mean, what did you see? Did you see something? She later expressed to me a concern that, quote, the house gave her the creeps. But I was so enthralled to be there and to buy this big old house, which I was crazy for doing. And because, I mean, it was just way too much house than we ever needed. And our furniture probably only filled a third of it, if that. But I did ask the owner of the house after that, and a very pointed question, just he and I said, is there anything wrong with this house? And you would think that he would ask me to clarify that. What do you mean, define wrong? Structurally, electrically, or heating, or windows, or what do you mean wrong? But he knew what I was talking about instantly. And he said, no, the house is fine. In fact, we've had mass in the living room twice, and two of my sons had their first communion in the living room. Now, for anyone who's Catholic, you'd know that people don't have mass celebrated in their living rooms as a matter of, regularity. It's just not something that's done, and certainly kids don't have their first communion in their living room as well. So it was an odd answer. It struck me as odd, but it later told me, years later, when we had mass in the living room and in the bedrooms and in the attic and in the basement, because mass is a part of the cleansing process of a house that's possessed by a demon. I then knew that they had attempted to cleanse the house as well, and probably thought that they had succeeded, and then decided, well, that job's done. It's time to get out of here.
Sure.
And they sold the house and hoped for the best with us. Well, they didn't cleanse it. They had only stirred this thing up and left it kind of for us to deal with.
When he told you that they had had two masses in the living room and that the sons had had communion, that didn't send up a red flag?
Oh, it certainly did. No question it sent up a red flag. But again, not having any direct experience with any of this stuff, you know, I just thought, well, you know, they were Irish. Maybe this is some kind of an Irish tradition. Okay, they had mass in their house. That's good. Maybe the place is okay.
You also had an experience at that house before you bought it, after you were a child, being so enthralled with it, you had kind of an epiphany of sorts at the location of the house. Is that correct?
Oh, yeah. You read the book then.
I sure did. And in fact, I have to say this is a wonderful read. I recommend it to anybody out there. It just – the suspense grows with every page. Very well written, Bob. I love the
book. Thank you. Well, you're right. And I'm glad that you picked up on that because when that happened – that whole night, which I don't want to get into it too deeply.
Too much,
it's
right.
Pretty crazy. But, yes, that night is kind of when I made a transformation in my life from being, you know, a crazy teenager to an adult. And as I was walking along early in the morning, probably 4 o'clock in the morning, early one morning, after having a relatively wild night, I stood in front of that house and looked at it, as I did every time I walked by. But for some reason, I just remember that particular night standing in front of the house because it was such a watershed event for me. My life changed that night, and you know, I kind of went on a whole new course. And it's odd that part of that decision was that house, at least being part of the picture, because I eventually, the decisions I made that night to follow God eventually brought me back to that same place where I took a picture that's on the cover of the book. I was standing in the same place as I later would be when I took the picture of the house the day we moved in. So, yeah,
oh, wow.
It's all kind of spooky and has the you know, has an air of divine providence behind it. And I'm certainly no saint, but God uses people, and I think he used me. I know.
I agree. Yeah.
Bob, I got to ask, when you first moved into the house, and I know you had to be excited, we can tell in your voice that you were thrilled to buy that house in 1988, and you move in with your family, and everything seems perfect. You're happy. You're content. You're settling in. When did things start to go downhill?
Well, we moved in December the 12th or 13th, I think we closed. We moved in right before, you know, a few weeks before Christmas. You know, all was gay and we were excited in this big house and did our best to decorate it for the, you know, furniture we had at the time. My mother and father and extended family came to this place for, you know, Christmas dinner, and it was pretty impressive, and we were happy, and you know, it was just a kind of euphoric time. But I would say that beginning in the first weeks of January of 1989, so probably not even a month after we moved into the house, we began to experience strange occurrences that we finally determined were not normal, that they were, in fact, paranormal, for whatever that meant. We came to the conclusion that there was a spirit or a ghost in the house. There was just no other explanation. The first event that happened was seemingly, you know, not that big of a deal, but there's a large coat closet underneath the big wooden steps in the front of the house. It'd go up to a second floor balcony. And inside that large closet, which is a storage closet, coat closet, has a light in it with a simple pull chain. And it's a light that resembles an old gas light. The house had gas lights when it was built, and there's a pull chain. And, you reach in where the light is, you find the chain, you pull it and turn on the light and, you know, do whatever you're going to do. Well, I found after, so many days of going there to get my overcoat in the morning or coming home at night, every time I would reach in to find that chain to turn on the light, I couldn't find it. Or it would be wrapped around the top of the light. Or on some occasions, you could get the chain, but it wouldn't pull down because it was very meticulously wrapped around one of the small screws that held in the crystal shade. So after that happened three or four times, I realized, hey, you know, I went to my wife because we were the only two adults in the house. Our children were 4, 3, 2, and a newborn. They certainly couldn't get in that closet and certainly couldn't get near the chain on the light. So I surmised that my wife was pulling the chain and, you know, because of the spring action, it was flying up and wrapping itself around the light, which seems logical until I, you know, questioned her on it. And she looked at me and said, I don't know what you're talking about. I know how to turn a light off. I don't let the chain fly. And in fact, I haven't been in the closet for a couple days. So with that little disagreement or, you know, her response, I said, okay, let's test this. And one morning, took the coat, looked the light. We both looked at it, turned it off. We could see it was hanging straight. I said, don't go in the closet for the rest of the day. I came home. We opened the door at the same time. I reached in, and sure enough, the chain was, you know, wrapped around the light again. So with that, seemingly, not a big deal, but we realized with that event, there's something going on in this house. And those types of kind of playful, non-threatening experiences continued to proliferate and occur. Like we'd come down in the morning and all the lights would be on in the first floor, or the water would be running, or a radio would be on. Things that were inexplicable, and we finally just came to refer to this spirit as Casper, the friendly ghost, hoping that this thing wasn't serious and that we could, in fact, coexist with it, as previous owners had to have. So we went on, and eventually the children began to experience similar things as they grew older and more aware. But for the first, 5 years or so, it didn't seem to be a big concern. It was a curiosity. It was something that didn't happen all the time. The chain thing would have, had I not taken a wire and tied it to the chain and tied it to a coat hook so it couldn't wrap itself around. So that's the introduction that we had.
So, and I think it was your oldest son, Bobby, was the first to claim the blue room and sleep in the blue room?
Well, he didn't claim it. He was only 3 years old. We divided these bedrooms up between the kids. You know, there's five bedrooms four large bedrooms and a fifth bedroom, which really was a room dedicated to, a maid's linen laundry room, which in fact is a guest room. We use it. It's big enough. It's a normal size bedroom in any normal size house. In this house, it was a lot smaller. So we divided the rooms up. My daughter got a bedroom. My two youngest sons got a bedroom. They had bunk beds. We had the master bedroom, and Bobby had this large, impressive room in the front of the house. All the rooms had fireplaces in them and, big spacious rooms and impressive. His had a walk-in closet with a light in it. And that's the area he decided to make his bedroom. He wouldn't sleep in the bed. He slept in the closet on the floor, and we eventually put a crib mattress on the floor so he could sleep there because he would not sleep in the bed. And we simply thought, well, it's a big house. It's a big bedroom. He'll get used to it. There was an issue with that room, which we would later find out.
Well, so far, it sounds just like you said, a playful poltergeist or a playful spirit that just kind of like to have fun with a light switch and you know, playing little simple pranks. As you mentioned, for the first 5 years, things were kind of quiet and you know, just odd things happening, of course. When did things start to go from bad to worse?
Well, I think, you know, things started to go from bad or started to get serious long before I realized that this spirit was behind it. You know, my young son Bobby, immediately living in that room, his personality changed. I just thought he was growing up and that was the personality that he had, but he became very introverted, very serious, how can I put it? I don't want to say he just acted not like your average 4 or 5 year old. As I said, and you know, that spring after we were experiencing this activity, my mother, who I told her about it, suggested that we have one of the priests from her parish, she was Catholic, come to the house and bless the house with prayers and holy water.
So can I ask, when
Yes.
you moved into the house, you were not Catholic?
No, we weren't. I left the church like many, you know, when I was 21 years old, and eventually became my wife. We were evangelical, Bible-carrying Christians, and attended a church on the outskirts of Pittsburgh. So, no, I was not Catholic whatsoever. Had left the church far behind and had nothing to do with it. And, you know, I'm not saying that in any kind of, you know, denigrating way. It's just that we weren't Catholic.
Right.
And my mother was still Catholic. She had raised us Catholic, at least, you know, my early years before I stopped going to Mass when I was a teenager. So we had a priest come from her parish, and as he was going through the house with the holy water, and it was a kind of a joyous event, and I certainly was happy. Hopefully it was going to take care of these problems, and he was throwing holy water in each room, and we were on the second floor, and we were heading down the hallway, coming to Bobby's room, and as we came to his room, this little three-year-old boy, very defiantly, turned in front of us and stood in the doorway to the room with the door closed, put his hands on the door frame on each side of the door frame and looked the priest dead in the eye. And he said, "You're not coming in this room," which I thought, what in the world is this all about? And this little three-year-old boy defiantly was saying, "You can't bring your holy water into this bedroom." So I was ready to grab him and pull him out of the way, but the priest, not wanting to make a scene, just said, "Oh, that's okay," and threw holy water on the closed door and walked by it. But that event, again, as I remembered all of these things later, they gained significance.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the earliest, I think, very serious thing that happened, again, not attributing it at the time to the spirit, my wife and I in 1995, 1996, actually, we began a large project in our master bedroom that was going to take several months to complete. It was quite a project. And it involved moving doors and fireplaces and all, you know, it was a messy job. So we moved into that front bedroom and moved Bobby into that smaller room I referred to a little while ago.
Right.
And as we moved into that bedroom, after about a month or so, my wife's whole personality began to change. Now, this is a woman who was like my right arm and my left arm together. I mean, she helped me in politics. She helped me on campaigns. She helped me with fundraisers. She entered politics herself. She was president of the local school board. She did our finances. I mean, she had everything and plus had four kids. She was on the ball. And slowly over a period of months, she went from this very active and involved, in-control woman to someone who couldn't even, you know, do the dishes. I mean, it was bad. And, you know, I realized she was having serious problems until finally it got so bad. She had what amounted to a full-fledged nervous breakdown. She was in Allegheny General Hospital for 2 weeks in a lockdown unit, a psychiatric ward under doctor's care and medication. And I had no idea. This thing just came out of the blue. And
out of the blue.
Yeah, out of the blue room.
Right. Now, at that point, you didn't put it together.
No, not at all. I mean,
it was too early, and yeah.
Now, after she comes home and, you know, she's frail and trying to recover, and I eventually finish the work and we move back into our normal bedroom. And within 3 or 4 months, she's fine. I mean, she had a diagnosis of all this manic depression, all these serious mental issues, and was on all this medicine, and then she's fine. Just recently, she went to renew a life insurance policy, and they looked at her medical records, and they said, all this stuff says you had all these problems, and she said,
no,
I'm not a manic depressant, and it was hard for her to try to say that. You know, her problems were beyond, you know, kind of medical science, because she completely recovered and was fine. Again, at the time, I thought it was legitimate. But then later on, this thing then turned its sights upon two of my sons, Bobby, who moved back into that room, and then my youngest son, Charlie, as well. And it started to work on them. Mentally, they would end up and spend numerous stints in Western Psychiatric Hospital, and it just was a nightmare. And again, I thought I had family members that just had problems with mental illness. It wasn't until the blew off the thing in the early 2002 time frame, the paranormal activity, that I finally began to realize that, first of all, this was not a ghost. This was an evil entity. And two, it was trying to hurt us, because the attacks then became physical.
Two quick questions for you, Bob. One from our chat room. One of the listeners would like to know, did your son Bobby ever talk about having an imaginary friend, a playmate, or someone that he would talk to or communicate in the blue room?
No, he didn't, but later on he did describe to us an experience he had when he was home alone one day when he was sick, and my wife left him to go to the pharmacy to get some medicine. He was, I can't recall, maybe he was 8 to 10 years old, this thing appeared to him. While she was gone, and came into the room, and scared him to death. I mean, in fact, it's in the book. He describes in his own words what took place. So, no, he didn't see this thing as any type of a friend. It scared him to death. And through their childhood years, this thing would appear. It would manifest itself in different ways, but it was always in a way to scare them. And it did scare them.
You talk about Bobby sleeping in the closet and refusing to sleep in his bed. Did he ever tell you why he did that, or did you ever figure that out?
No. He just said, I don't like this room.
But yet he was drawn to it.
I don't like this bed. And I just attributed it to, the big room. He'll get used to it, as he eventually did a year or so later, begin to sleep in his bed. But nonetheless, that room had serious issues. I would later find out from a woman who grew up in the house back in the 1940s and 50s that their family would never use that room as a bedroom.
Well, I read obviously I read the book, and I read in Bobby's words his experience in the blue room, and there was two or three entities that he actually saw in concession. And in his telling of that story, he says that the third entity that appeared to him looked like a light bulb person, like it was a human in a light bulb form. And the priest told him that yep. they believed that was a positive,
angel.
Yeah, an angelic being. And I'm wondering, why would it present itself as a light bulb when the light bulb was the key, one of the key things that the entity was messing with? Why would it choose the light
yeah,
bulb?
Yeah, he said it was just an entity that was very bright. And then something appeared over his bed, as I recall, that seemed electric. And it was hovering over his bed. And, that does sound, the priest thought that maybe this was some type of a protection for him, because the black figure did go away. Now,
right.
He was so scared, he was just scared to death. I think there might be something to the priest's interpretation of what happened. But again, it's hard to tell. I wasn't there. But in fact, the event did end with the appearance of that bright light figure.
Well, and maybe it was the angel's way of saying, don't be afraid of what's occurring with the light bulb.
I don't know. But... by that time, as it was beginning to show itself, and many times after that, it would appear in that similar way of kind of like the Grim Reaper. It would be dressed in black. Sometimes my daughter saw its face. It would have this cynical smile on its face. I mean, this is just so bizarre. But it did. It would appear as this black-robed figure.
As things progress and you start to see more and more activity happen in the house, and with the events that happen with your son and your wife and your other children having experiences as well, when did you finally decide to reach out to somebody to say, hey, look, we got something going on here that we don't know what we're dealing with and we need help?
Well, I had a very, very traumatic hellish experience 2003, I believe it was. My two sons attacked me one Sunday night. And now I'm not talking about, 10 or 12 years old, 12-year-olds. My son was 18 and had me by about 20 pounds. And my younger son wasn't much smaller. And, my son attacked me like a demon. I mean, he just went at me. Now, again, he had been having severe mental issues. He was on medication, not in good shape. And I wasn't, looking back on it, I wasn't mentally stable myself, I believe, in dealing with this situation. And it turned into a real crazy event. And the police came and... I was arrested, went to jail. Here I am, former county commissioner in shackles, and the media covered it, and television, and newspapers, and it was just terrible. So after that fact, after that, and I'm banished from the house by the court for several months, we were in family counseling, and we were in family counseling with the pastor of our local church, the Evangelical Christian Church that we went to. And by this time, the paranormal activity in the house was kind of out of control. I mean, it was just, you know, moving furniture and doing, you know, it was very kind of in your face. And I could then, I began to surmise that this activity was in fact tied to the problems with my kids. So I told the pastor that I felt there was some type of evil that was possessing or dominating or oppressing the house that was causing this behavior in my children, in my sons. And he immediately discounted what I said and said, listen, you're overreacting, you're being emotional, you're trying to come up with explanations for what seems to be standard adolescent rebellion and aggressive behavior, and just take it easy. This isn't evil. This is normal. But I tried to explain to him it wasn't normal. And he just discounted me and had no idea what to say or do. And that was the end. But as far as he went. So as things continued to get crazy in the house, I had to make a decision on what I was going to do and who I was going to turn to. You know, who you the old standard question, who you going to call? Well, I couldn't call Bill Murray and Dan Aykroyd, right, even though I wish I could have, and have them show up in their white ambulance and their ray guns, you know, or whatever they had. I ended up going to the Catholic Church, the only organization that I knew of that claimed to have a handle on this stuff. And the church came to our aid, treated me not as a kook, but seriously, and thus began the battle, so to speak.
Now, before you went to the church for help, you were taking steps on your own to try and battle this entity. For instance, I believe you tied a crucifix to the chain to the light in the closet.
I did. You know, I began just to experiment to an extent. I mean, this chain was going crazy again, and I did. I took a rosary beads. And took the brass chain and tied a knot with the chain on the rosary beads and let them hang. Closed the door, came back, and the rosary beads were disconnected from the chain. The chain was wrapped around the top of the light, and the rosary beads were hanging by themselves on a coat hook. So I took the beads again, and I took the chain and tied so many knots in it that really there was no chain left. Just you pull the rosary beads to turn on the light. Well, I guess that this thing didn't want to take the time to untie all these knots. One, I guess it could handle. So it just wrapped the rosary beads all the way around the light. I hung a weight from the chain to see if it could move this, probably a weight that weighed a couple ounces, and it made no difference. It put the weight up on top of the light. So I then, I took my Bible, I went in the closet and closed the door and read my Bible. I read my Bible through the house. I commanded this thing to leave. And, you know, I was just kind of flying by the seat of my pants, based upon what, biblical teaching I had to command evil to leave, and evil will leave in the name of Jesus Christ. Well, it wasn't leaving, and I needed help, and eventually would get it. Not that it made a lot of difference initially, but at least we engaged in the battle.
So let's get to the battle.
Well, initially I had called the Mother Superior of a convent some nuns that I had come to know. I would volunteer at the convent and do work for them after I left political office. It was kind of a settling thing for me. And so I called the Mother Superior of this convent and explained to her what I was experiencing in the house. And she said, you know, it sounds to me like you have a malevolent presence in the house. You need help. You need to contact, there are some priests at the Passionist Monastery in Pittsburgh that do deliverance work, and you should talk to them. So I initially talked to one priest, Father Ed Moran. He came for several weeks, said Mass in the living room, and a number of other blessings and prayers, and things got no better. They got worse. And then eventually a second priest would come. His name is Father Mike Salvagna. And soon we had two priests coming on a regular basis, once a week or so, to pray and to bless and to do various rituals, with really no success. This thing seemed to have would have temper tantrums after they left and move furniture and move pictures and just do all kind of unsettling things. So finally, a good friend of mine, Tom Murphy, who was mayor of Pittsburgh at the time, a good friend of mine since we had been in politics together, said that he would go see the bishop of the Diocese of Pittsburgh. He's now Cardinal Donald Worrell. He's a cardinal of the church in Washington, D.C. And Tom Murphy went and saw the bishop, then called me a few days later and said that a priest would be calling me that night at 7 p.m. To be there to answer the phone, and he would tell me what the church would do. And that was the beginning. And it was kind of like a scene from The Matrix where Morpheus meets with Mr. Anderson and offers him the choice of the red pill or the blue pill. You know, I had the choice of, he said, you can move out, you can sell the house and wish for the best of whoever buys it, or you can stay. And if you wish to fight this, the church will stand with you. We will help you. We will not abandon you. And in a year, we'll know if we're making progress. And certainly that was not what I wanted to hear, because I thought that with the bishop's involvement, they would be able to, you know, come and fix this problem. But as he pointed out to me, this problem was a long-term issue, because apparently it was a very powerful demon.
Now, Bob, if you don't mind me asking, I've heard a lot of stories over the years of folks who have had issues similar to yours, and they've gone to their church, whether it be a Catholic church or Protestant or Baptist church, and it seems like the church is really leery about getting involved unless there's tangible evidence or proof that it's actually going on in the home. They always attribute it to mental health issues or possible drug and alcohol issues or some other outside factor that's contributing to the situation. Being that you were a former Allegheny County Commissioner and in politics, do you think that your background and your standing in Allegheny County and in Pittsburgh helped the church to get involved and act so quickly the way they did?
Well, no question. Absolutely. I mean, my credibility and my connections helped. And but, you know, I think and I don't disagree at all with what you just said. But I think with the publication of this book and, you know, the message, that's a credible message and a credible story. I already know that the Catholic Church in the United States, that the order has gone out that every diocese will, in fact, have a trained exorcist
right.
in the diocese. Because this type of activity is becoming more common. And hopefully, when people read this book, and priests read this book, and bishops read this book, it's going to get their attention. And they're going to realize that people that have these problems aren't always crazy, don't always have mental issues, that this is for real, and they have to know how to deal with it. And if that's what comes from my book, that people take this stuff serious, and I believe this is a story for its time. I mean, evil is becoming more and more and more commonplace in our culture, in the United States. I mean, it seems every week you read about some other horrific act that someone took in killing people and harming others, and evil is behind that. And it's becoming more and more prevalent. Evil is taking over our culture, and I think this book hopefully is a warning siren to tell religious, whether they be Catholic or Protestant, evil is at work, guys, and you need to be prepared to deal with it.
And with that, we're going to take our 9:30 break and step away for a few minutes. Our guest tonight, Bob Cranmer, former Allegheny County Commissioner, politician and author of the book Demon of Brownsville Road. You can check out the website demonofbrownsvilleroad.com. When we come back, we'll open up the phone lines for any callers that have questions for Mr. Cranmer tonight, and we will ask some questions. I have some questions. I want to know about some of these experiences. One I've heard involves a very popular movie that was out a few years ago, and we'll talk to Bob about that when we come back. So keep it right here to BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio, live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. We'll be back after the break with more with our guest, Bob Cranmer.
Hope you brought an extra pair of undies.
Where the hell did everybody go?
You're listening to Beyond the Edge Radio.
Fantastic. The only place where dead air is a good thing.
Welcome back to tonight's program. This is BTE Radio, short for Beyond the Edge Radio. We are live here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. I'm your host of tonight's program, Eric Altman. With me, the latest contestant in our search for a new co-host, Marie Samuels, doing a fantastic job. Thank you, Marie. You're doing wonderful.
Thank you, Eric. I love being on the show.
Well, we're glad you're here with us tonight because we have a fantastic guest joining us. He is former Allegheny County Commissioner, author of the book Demon of Brownsville Road, and he's a fellow Pennsylvanian. Glad Bob is joining us tonight, and thank you, Bob, for spending your Sunday evening with us. The story is truly fascinating. Our listeners are enjoying it, and I'm enthralled by what you went through, and it's just amazing.
Well, again, thank you for having me. I never pass up the opportunity for an interview, whether it's a nationally syndicated interview or a local interview. My job is to tell this story. That's why I wrote the book. We're going to have a couple television programs later this year, and I know that my agent is talking to different movie folks, so if that happens, fine. But my job was to publish this book, and I have to represent it.
And during the break, we were talking about where folks could pick up a copy of the book if they're interested. The website, of course, the demonofbrownsvilleroad.com. And you said it's available at any of your local bookstores?
Well, yes. Well, you know, the publisher is Penguin, Penguin Random House. Sure. So, you know, they're in the book business to sell books. And I know the bookstores around Pittsburgh have had a hard time, the Barnes & Nobles especially. They've had a hard time keeping the book in stock. I know last week I had a big presentation in Bethel Park, PA, and usually Barnes & Noble comes to them or they give us a case of books to sell, and then we'll give them the money. Well, my wife called them to get, you know, to see if we could get the case of books, and they said they were sold out. The two stores near us were both sold out. I think one had three copies of the book. So it's been a real hot seller around here, but if people listening want to buy it online, it's you know, Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com, Google Books, Walmart, and then I was contacted and I was told the ChristianBooks.com will soon have it on their site as well. So it's readily available.
Fantastic. On the phone with us, calling in from the eastern side of Pennsylvania, our booking person, our wonderful booking person, and a large reason tonight that you're on the show with us, Bob, Gabriel Cole is on the line with us. And Gabriel, you have a question for Bob tonight?
Yes, I do. Thanks for taking the call, Eric.
Oh, my pleasure.
Mr. Cramer, first of all, I just want to quickly thank you for writing the book. This summer when I picked up your book, I was actually going through a huge crisis of faith. And in reading your book, it helped remind me why I wanted to stick with my Catholic faith. So I thank you for that very much. The question I have for you is, you mentioned rosary several times throughout the book, and it was one weapon you used against the demon in the house. And you specifically mentioned one that you had received from Medjugorje. And the interesting thing was that the demon kept taking apart that particular rosary. And I was wondering if you could possibly share if you knew if that rosary had actually been blessed, because then you get a second rosary that's sort of a more sturdy rosary, and that one's not so easily taken apart. And I wondered if those rosaries had been blessed to your knowledge.
You know, that's a good question I never thought of. And I just automatically thought that, you know, this had been given as a gift to my mother, crystal rosary with a silver crucifix on it, had come, as you mentioned, from Medjugorje. I just took for granted that this thing was holy from where it came from, that it would have been blessed. But you know what? Maybe it wasn't. But I'll tell you what, that demon certainly spent a lot of time on that particular set of rosary beads.
Right.
And not only those beads, almost any, even the big black ones that I mentioned, the big heavy-duty rosaries that the nuns used to wear. You know, it went after those rosaries on a few occasions as well. And at least on one or two occasions, it interlocked those beads. It would put the beads, for those not familiar with the book, the little chain that holds the beads together, it would push those links together in like a series of little figure eights. So the rosary beads could not be utilized. They couldn't be prayed because it was no longer a loop. They were interconnected. And so this thing spent a lot of time preventing me from praying the rosary. Now, I know a lot of people, even Catholics, don't want to take the time to, you know, screw around, you know, spend the 20, 25 minutes to pray a rosary. But I thought if this evil entity took that much time to stop me from praying the rosary, there must be something to it. So I pray the rosary, believe me.
That's a good question, Gabe. Do you have anything else for Bob tonight? I think we lost Gabe.
Oh, you know, you just came back. I just can hear you now.
Okay, great. Do you have any
Thank
other questions
so
for Bob?
Letting me ask a question.
Do you have anything else for Bob tonight?
No, that's great. Thank you so much for allowing me to ask that question. That
sure.
was one of the things that bothered me since I read the book. So thank you so much. And it's a wonderful interview. Thank you, Eric.
Oh, thank you for the recommendation. Have a good night, Gabe.
You too. Bye-bye.
Take care.
You too.
All right, folks, if you're interested in calling in, you still have some time to do so on the show tonight. Toll-free 877-677-2858. 877-677-2858. Or if you're local, you can dial 724 844-824-1494. Our guest tonight, Bob Kramer, we're talking about The Demon of Brownsville Road, the book that he's put out, and the website, of course, demonofbrownsvilleroad.com. Check those out. And as Bob said, the book is in hot demand right now, so if you're looking for a copy of it, you may have to look far and wide to get a copy. But that's a good thing, Bob, that the people are out there buying the book and reading about your story.
Yeah, I mean, that's why I wrote it. And, you know, I think as the story spreads and more people talk about it, that there'll be more interest. And, I mean, that's, you know, we get interview requests like this now on a regular basis. And, you know, that's part of the deal when you write a book, and you hope for that to happen.
Yeah, I recall seeing the interview they did with you on KDK in Pittsburgh and some of the other local channels, and right around Halloween time, and perfect time for it, of course. But it was a very fascinating interview, and the book has been getting some great reviews from what I understand, which is very good to hear. Unfortunately, we won't have time to get into everything that happened, and we don't want to give away the entire book. We want people to buy it, of course. But there is one thing I would like to talk with you about before the end of the program tonight, and that's an incident that occurred involving a very popular movie that you thought might help the family dealing with this situation. Would you talk about that a little bit?
Well, sure. And, you know, just as a preface, I want to make clear that, you know, most people, and some people have even complained on Amazon and so on, this, you know, I thought I was buying a haunted house story. And I was going to, you know, I'm buying a book that, you know, is going to scare me to death. Well, you know, certainly this book has, you know, all the attributes of a scary book, of a haunted house book, but that's not what I wrote. This book is about good and evil. It's about the existence of God. It's about the existence and unmasking the devil and his demons, that good and evil do exist. And God and the devil exist, and the whole realm of the supernatural is all for real. So in dealing with evil, and as I began to learn that all that Catholic hocus-pocus is for real, and that anything associated with the sacrificial death of Jesus Christ on the cross, and I say that as a Christian, but I say that as a matter of fact, that evil is repulsed by it, and the rosaries and crucifixes and the Mass and everything that has to do with Jesus and his dying for the sins of mankind, of humans, evil is repulsed by it. And that's why this thing would bend crosses and break crucifixes in half and throw pictures of Jesus on the floor. And as I began to understand that, I figured, well, we're going to give you all that you can take and then some. And 10 years ago is when the Passion of the Christ movie was debuted and introduced, and, you know, to busloads of people and controversy about how graphic the, you know, the scourging and crucifixion scenes were. So understanding how this evil was repulsed by anything to do with Jesus, I figured, well, I'm going to take this movie. I had seen it in the movie theater, and we put it on in that particular bedroom, the blue room. We put a very good DVD player on that you could hit repeat, and that movie would play over and over and over again, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, for over 6 months. We played that movie in the house. At one time, we played it in two different rooms. And the thing would turn the television off. It would turn the DVD player off. It even got to the point where it could get the DVD out of the player. Now, it never broke it, but we would find it on the floor. And once we realized how this movie aggravated this demon, My wife took a full-length body mirror and put it in front of the TV set, positioning it in a way so there was no way you could be in the room and not see what was being depicted either on the TV or in the mirror, which reflected what was on the TV. And that was powerful, and it helped us. And it, I believe, kept a continuous pressure on this thing that helped us to eventually prevail. Now, I say all that to say that was a very powerful movie that Mel Gibson played created. And, you know, it concerns me in writing this book that in Unmasking Evil the way I do, that, you know, it's like writing a book about the mob. And, you know, there's a backlash. And I think there was a backlash against Mel Gibson in looking at what happened to him after he debuted that movie and what happened to him personally and to his career. So I continue to pray the rosary almost every day, and to pray for protection, to pray to protect my family. I don't think that the Lord is going to put us out there like that and let us hang, but I pray for protection because this world is still there. It didn't go away. Evil still exists. And, you know, I'm doing what I was, I believe, destined to do, to tell this story.
You've had numerous masses in the house and blessings, and do you still have that done to this day?
Well, I haven't. We haven't had mass in the house for a number of years, and the priest. It's been Father Mike probably hasn't been to bless the house in probably a year and a half or so. But I can tell you that I know how to do it as a lay person now. I know how to do it well. I obviously have come through this with quite a bit of experience. And when I feel it needs to be done, I do it. If I feel that Father Mike or I have to bring a priest back at some point to celebrate Mass, I will do that. But I think we're just still dealing with what the exorcist called echo events that would continue for a time and then eventually fade away.
So they do pop up from time to time.
From time to time, yes. And I hopefully we're going to get to the point at some point where I will feel comfortable in selling the house because it's a big old place and it's certainly a lot more house than we ever needed, and certainly more house than my wife and I need now. Our kids are all grown, and so we're still there for now, and we'll see what the future. It certainly would make a nice bed and breakfast at some point if someone wanted to do that. And you know, with the notoriety the house has, it probably would be a success.
It probably would.
Just as long as people don't come in and have seances and things like
that. That's not a good idea. Marie, did you have any closing questions for Mr. Kramer tonight?
I did. One of the priests had recommended something for your wife and you to do in order to create a loving environment in the household that made you feel a little awkward. And I think you might be knowing what I'm referring to.
Yeah, I do.
Now, at this point, were you a Catholic?
You know,
would you have considered yourself a Catholic?
Still probably not.
Okay, because that makes more sense to me.
I would say that, you know, once this stuff started happening and we began dealing with the priests on a weekly basis, my wife and I began to attend church at our local Catholic church. We just felt comfortable with it. And I would say, yeah, we became practicing Catholics. Now, I was baptized Catholic. My wife was a Methodist growing up. And by the time we came through all of this, we were told my wife, she was baptized by fire, so to speak. So we're both practicing Catholics.
So what was the advice the priest gave you?
Well, you know, I was concerned. You know, you have to understand, living with this thing in the house was like living with, you know, the invisible man. It would come into our bedroom at night. You know, it would do things, take our pictures off the wall, wake up the morning and, you know, change that I had left on the dresser. All the coins would be standing on edge just to let me know, hey, I was here. And so I'm thinking this thing is around us all the time. And I just felt odd, you know, having sex with my wife. You know, where's this thing at? Is it here with us?
Watching, right.
Yeah, and I brought it up to the priest, and he said, you know, that part of marriage, which is holy, you know, union between a husband and wife, and the bed is undefiled, that's a holy experience that's designed by God, and that, in fact, a demon could not watch that because it was not, you know, a perversion. It was holy. It was sanctioned, you know, and not to worry about it. And in fact, do it as much as you want.
Well, and so I was a little confused with that because I thought, and I'm not terribly familiar with the Catholic belief, but my impression was Catholics believed that you only had sex for procreation.
You know, I don't think so. I don't think that's the case. No, you know, I don't know who believes that. I mean, all you have to do is, you know, read the Old Testament, and it talks about, you know, sex being a very enjoyable thing. And it was designed to be that way.
Between a husband and a wife.
Yeah, I think there's nothing. I think the Catholic Church is just against birth control. You know, you can have sex as much as you want. Just don't use birth control. And that's why traditionally Catholic families were so big.
So large. Exactly. And that's why I thought they believed it was only for procreation. So I'm glad you clarified that for me.
Yeah. No, it's just... just expect to have a big family.
Oh, goodness. Well, that's a great way to end the show tonight. Bob, I want to thank you so much for spending your Sunday evening with us and telling just the tip of the iceberg of your story, because there's so many more details that we didn't cover tonight. And I'm glad that things have finally settled down and calmed down in your home for you and your family. That's great to hear. We really appreciate you spending your time with us, and what a fascinating story really is.
Well, I sign every book that I sign. I have to make clear that I don't want to take credit. I want to put credit where credit is due, and I sign every book in his name, because without, without the power and the backing and the support of Jesus and his cross that we used and the power to defeat the evil, we would have been helpless. So, he gave us the weapons, he gave us the gun, but you know, we fought the battle. But without his presence and love for us, we never could have been successful. So, all glory to he and his name.
Amen.
Bob Kramer, our guest tonight here at BTE Radio, Beyond the Edge Radio. Visit his website, thedemonofbrownsvilleroad.com, the same name of the book. And also you can go to our website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. We have Bob's bio listed there and several links that can take you to his Facebook page and learn more about Bob and his background, and pick up a copy of the book if you can find it, of course. The Demon of Brownsville Road, Pittsburgh's Family Battle with Evil in Their Home. Bob, thank you so much. It was a real pleasure talking to you tonight on the show.
Oh, thank you. I really enjoyed this. This was a great, great interview. It was an easy interview. Thank you.
We try our best. So thank you so much for coming on tonight.
Bye-bye.
Have a wonderful evening and a great Sunday night.
Okay, you too. Bye-bye.
Right, bye-bye.
Goodbye, Bob.
Bye-bye.
Bob Kramer joining us tonight. Murray, what a story. What a great guy. I just can't. I'm blown away. I really am.
It truly is the tip of the iceberg. When you read the book, there is so much that this family endured, and I know, you know, because he needs to sell the book, we can't get into all the details on the radio. So I highly encourage everybody out there to buy the book. It is an excellent read, an easy read, and it's just an awesome, awesome story of a family coming together and defeating evil.
I'm going to have to pick a copy of it up if I can find it.
I'll send you mine.
Oh, no, don't do that. I'll get a copy somewhere. If not, then I'll be reaching out to you and say, hey, loan me the book.
Yeah, do it. No, I don't have a problem sending it to you.
That'd be cool. I appreciate it.
Sweet.
I got to check it out and find out for myself some of these interesting details because there's a lot more to this story, folks. And to get a copy of the book, beyondtheedgeradio.com is our website. You can go there, and there are links right on our main page. If you scroll all the way down, you'll find them there. demonofbrownsvilleroad.com, the Facebook page, facebook.com/demonofbrownsville. Great guest tonight and a great guest co-host tonight as Marie is competing for our position as the co-host here at BT Radio. Great job tonight. I'm really, really impressed.
Thanks, Eric. I'm glad to hear that. I really want this position. So when it comes to voting time, people, don't forget the spooky gal over in the Emerald City.
That's
Give
right.
me your vote.
And go Seahawks.
And go Seahawks. That's right. Super Bowl.
I know. I've seen your pictures. You're wearing the little jersey. They're holding it up for Christmas. And
I'm a hardcore 12th. Well, I'm a Seattle native, so.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah.
There you go. Next week on the show, we're going to be starting off Cryptid Month here at BTE Radio. We're going to be talking about the Minerva Monster and a documentary film on small-town monsters done by Seth Breedlove, who's a film director. He's joined by Alan McGargle and Jesse Morgan of Fathom Frontiers. We're going to be talking about an incident that occurred in Minerva, Ohio in 1978, where a couple of weeks in that August of that year, the folks that lived in that rural farmhouse were haunted and harassed by some kind of hairy, upright-walking creature that beat on the home and tromped around the woods at night. And we'll find out more about the story from Jesse, Alan, and Seth next week on the show, so make sure you tune in for that. But also remember this, folks, right after tonight's program, flip over to the Animal Planet channel and watch Finding Bigfoot in Pennsylvania. They'll be stomping around in my research area. You might even get to see yours truly, my ugly mug sitting in the town hall somewhere next to the girl with the purple hair. That's my niece. So tune in for that. Marie, thanks again for joining us tonight on the program. It was great having you, and best of luck in the contest.
Thank you so much. I had a blast.
Glad you did, and I did as well. Folks, you've been listening to BTE Radio here on the Para X Radio Network, Planet Paranormal, and TuneIn.com. We'll be back next Sunday night kicking off the show at 8 p.m., so make sure you're tuned in for another great program. Until then, have a great weekend, a great start to your new week, and we'll see you next Sunday night. Good night, everybody.
Good night.
Thanks for listening to Beyond the Edge Radio. Tune in live every Sunday night from 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern Time here on the Para X Radio Network and Planet Paranormal. You can find tonight's show along with all our archive shows on iTunes, Stitcher Radio, Podomatic, Podbean, Blueberry, Parapods, Planet Paranormal, and the Para X Radio Network. You can find all these links and more on our official website, beyondtheedgeradio.com. Music used on tonight's show was done so with permission of Midnight Syndicate. Visit their website at midnightsyndicate.com. Got feedback, questions, comments? We'd love to hear from you. Drop us a line at beyondtheedgeradio@gmail.com. Thanks again for listening, and we'll see you next time on BTE Radio. Beyond the Edge Radio is a Beyond the Edge Entertainment production heard here on Planet Paranormal and the Para X Radio Networks.